This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Brewski, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
This case just keeps getting weirder and darker and more twisted, and we're going to take a look at the legal end of it, however that may or may not play out. Of course, the death of 18-year-old Anna Kempner is what we're talking about. It's one of the most complicated cases, I think, of the year so far, not because investigators don't know where to look, but because the only people inside that cabin were members of the same blended family. We have Anna found concealed under a bed, a 16-year-old step-sibling publicly identified as a suspect, a stepmother invoking the Fifth Amendment, conflicting accounts inside the family, custody filings referencing potential criminal charges, a family in total collapse, and now this. Anna's grandmother says the 16-year-old doesn't remember what happened and was an emotional wreck. That opens an entirely different set of legal possibilities. So today, I want to go through every realistic path that this case could take, not assuming a trial, not assuming charges, not assuming intent, but breaking down what the law actually allows in situations like this. Bob Mata, defense attorney, host of the podcast Defense Diaries, is with us to do just that. Bob, in a situation where an 18-year-old is found concealed and the only other person within close proximity is the 16-year-old step-sibling, what are all the broad legal scenario investigators are weighing right now?
Well, since they're essentially getting stonewalled from at least portions of the family, that makes it tougher. Yeah. You've got grandma coming in with her. I mean, I how does grandma know that he doesn't remember shit?
Right.
You know, I mean, like that, yeah, that's the first thing, but stripping away the problems that investigators are going to have getting information from inside those cabins. Okay. Like from the family, they're going to really have to kind of try to piece it together in terms of video from the cruise ship, which I'm sure they're very actively compiling. If they haven't got it all already, they're going to have to follow the best they can where Anna was. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to have to build that timeline out, because here's like the legal scenarios. It was either an accident and then panic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like something happens, like they seem kind of old to be roughhousing to the point where, you know, like somebody falls, hits her head. Oh my God, I didn't mean to, you know, have her hit her head. She's bleeding out. What the fuck should I do? You know, you've got the potential for a medical emergency that was mishandled. You've got, again, just like maybe a fight that broke out between the two of them, whatever the hell's going on in that family. And again, something happens where the intent to kill wasn't there, you know, that it was a physical altercation, but, you know, the end goal wasn't to kill somebody. You've got impairment, you know, drugs, alcohol. You've got the issue of trying to get the kid evaluated, like to see if this trauma-induced memory loss thing is like real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's obviously the possibility of intentional harm, you know, and then probably the least likely, unless it's same cruise ship that Amy Bradley was on and you got the dude, the dancer.
is he still dancing all these years later?
Yeah. or
it's encore time.
Third party involvement. But
yeah,
that seems the most unlikely considering the concealment of her body.
You know? Bob, can I throw something in here? Before we get rolling on Anna and the stepbrother here, does the cruise line itself have any legal exposure here in this? Because did they have policies talking about who could be rooming in a specific cabin? These are two unrelated. Well, they're related, but they're unrelated biologically, teens sharing a cabin. I would think there would be some rules against that, maybe.
No, maybe. I mean, I don't know. Because so, what did they get? Two cabins.
There was multiple cabins, and it looks like it was, you know, when you have, you're traveling with children and it's a blended family, it's not a crazy scenario that, okay, the teens are staying in this room together. Now, was it a bad decision to put the 18-year-old with the 16-year-old boy if there had been awareness of allegations that he was making her feel uncomfortable in some way, shape, or form, if there had been any sort of history or pattern of behavior, which according to the boyfriend of now 18-year-old deceased Anna Kempner, there was. The boyfriend has said publicly that he had tried to warn the family that there he was on a video chat with her one night, and that the boyfriend had come in and basically tried to mount her in fewer terms, and that she was horrified of this man.
The stepbrother, not the boyfriend.
No, the stepbrother, the 16-year-old, had done this. That's the allegation. That's the claim that's been made by the boyfriend about the stepbrother, that this warning had been communicated some time ago, and that it was kind of brushed off as, you know, whatever, blah, 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 blah.
To the family, though, right?
That's the allegation. Now, we can't confirm that, but that's what he has said publicly. So I would think that if there's any liability here, it certainly, look, if someone dies on your property, you're liable. Doesn't fucking matter how it happened.
Sure.
There is some liability there. Is there any liability for parents putting teenagers in a blended family in a cruise? No. None whatsoever. That's fucking normal. But is there liability, you know, towards the parents? I mean, but then who's suing? who's getting who in trouble for something like that? What could be happening there? You can have another parent that may be looking at this from the outside. Although in this scenario, I don't know that you're necessarily going to have that, considering mom has pretty much all but, you know, written herself out of her daughter's life. It doesn't really seem like it's a scenario where someone's going to be coming back after dad or whoever made the rooming lodging choices in this sort of scenario.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of the cruise line itself, there's no criminal liability, you know,
they
didn't commit a crime. So the only thing that you're thinking about in this scenario is civil liability if they're exposed civilly. Yep. I mean, if they violated, and it sounds like Tony may have looked up to see if there was any kind of, I mean, because these weren't like, you know, a 7 and 8 year old. These were older teens. Like Tony said, that's super commonplace. I don't know if the cabins were connected, you know, by an interior door. But you know, that is not uncommon. I mean, we stick our kids in the same, you know, that we have the adult room when we get two rooms in a hotel, and we put our kids, you know, in their own room, usually connected so that we can, you know, hang out with each other at will. But, in that situation, unless there's a violated policy, or if, say, for instance, Anna didn't feel comfortable talking to anybody in her family about being stuck in the room with her stepbrother, but went to somebody on the ship and said, like, my parents stuck me in this room with this kid and he fucking scares the shit out of me. Like, so if the boat, anybody on the boat was put on notice and they ignored it, potentially, then you're talking about, there's some potential issues for liability that could bear some fruit. I mean, the other thing is that the family or say, for instance, you know, they caught something on video, you know, that somebody noticed or somebody saw something out when they were milling about in one of the, you know, 20 dance clubs on the boat or somewhere that there's, you know, the public is out there in the activities and, you know, and somebody noticed something off and said something to the ship and they're like, well,
sure.
You know, like I saw something and it may be nothing. It might be something,
but
you know, so if they find out if there's notice to which, you know, you're really not going to know through civil litigation until you get the discovery, but you know, you're going to find out through the criminal investigation. you know? So they're like if somebody is charged and shit starts coming out that Anna had gone to somebody and said something to somebody and the boat was on notice, then, you know, I mean, then at that point, the cruise lines are going to try to settle this shit.
Yeah.
Quickly. Under the table.
But right there, at the end of the day, though, if Anna had, which again, it seems unlikely, but if she did go to with somebody on the boat, one staff member on the cruise ship, and said, "Hey, my stepbrother makes me feel uncomfortable, and I'm stuck in this room with him," the cruise line isn't necessarily responsible for getting you another cabin. That's a family matter. That is an issue that I would imagine the cruise liner would be like, well, you got to kind of go deal with your family on this. You have a cruise and this is a room. Maybe should the cruise line contact the adults? Should probably be appropriate without a doubt, but it's not also an automatic, hey, here's a free room.
Sure.
You know, like none of that's going to take place. And what is the family going to do? Stop doing this shit to each other and get along.
Right.
That's probably the extent of it. If in fact that ever would have happened. The only other area I can think of potential liability for the cruise, if it were to go anywhere criminal, and this is pure speculation, and no way am I saying that this took place or not, would be, is if that 16-year-old had any substances in his body that were given to him by the cruise ship, meaning alcohol. Or anything else for that matter. But if he was somehow sneaking alcohol, getting alcohol illegally, they are pretty tight on that on cruise ships these days. It's not as easy as it once was when, you know, in like the 80s or the 90s, everything is, you know, you gotta have a card. It's not to say that an adult couldn't sneak it for you and do that. You know, the cruise ship would probably hold some sort of liability even there too. Or port of calls too.
Mm-hmm. No, where did they stop? Like, I'm not familiar with.
I don't have that in front of me. I do not know the answer.
Because I mean, you've always got that situation where off. Yeah. You know, they got some bad blow somewhere. Like if it was in the if it was in the Western Caribbean, you know, they got off somewhere, bought a bad bag of fentanyl laced cocaine. They're doing
like you
it
do
together.
With your family.
Right. I mean, but it's like, you know, theoretically, it could have been the kids, the two teens, you know, out there, not with the family. They're out. Yeah. I mean, who knows, man? I mean, there's like obviously the toxicology and the autopsy. Do we even know what the cause of death was at this point?
We do now. And it is asphyxiation by a strength by the chokehold type thing.
Wow.
So we do know that is what took place. To me, when you look at this in terms of who caused the death, obviously she didn't do this to herself.
Right.
If you're strictly looking at the cameras, and I'm sure there are cameras, I mean, I hope to God there are. I've been surprised in many other cases where it's like, what do you mean there's no cameras? If there's cameras facing down that hallway, which I can't imagine there isn't, they're going to see who came and went from that door. There's also the key cards that are going to tell you who came and went from that room.
Right.
That's going to narrow this down pretty quick as far as who possibly was in this room and who did this. I don't know that it's
and
going
when.
To be a huge question. Exactly.
You guys, I thought I'd read that it was just, they only saw that it was those two people going in and out of that room. I thought I read that on People
Magazine. That pretty much narrows it down because—
Doesn't it?
Yeah, there's not a lot of other options unless the rooms are connected and someone came in from a side or someone scaled the outside of the ship balcony,
which I do a lot on cruise ships.
That's fun. I do after I get my shitty bag of fentanyl laced cocaine, I'm always on the side of the cruise ship, you know, just scaling it. It's like Adventures in Babysitting, but on a carnival.
Exactly.
But the thing that's the thing, it's going to be pretty clear cut. I think who's involved in this, it's going to be more the question of, was this premeditated? Was this intentional? Was this a horrible accident? And then what occurred after, because obviously there was an intent to conceal in this point. This wasn't a holy shit, we were horsing around, I was being an asshole or whatever, and I took it too far and now she's not breathing. That would be a horrible accident that could be dealt with immediately. Probably not even murder charges. The fact that there was concealment, how much does that change the dynamics of this? Had someone just said, oh my God, we need help, this went horribly wrong, versus let's go take a nap and shove her under here with some life vests.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge factor, right? I mean, like obviously the easiest charge is going to be the concealment.
Yeah.
In terms of them trying to figure out what exactly they're going to charge anybody with is far more difficult in terms of the cause of her death, you know, because I mean, there's obviously involuntary manslaughter, which to me, considering that the kid's 16, assuming that he would be the one that was charged, that's the most likely, you know, that it was reckless conduct without intent. You know, obviously there's manslaughter, you know, heat of passion type thing, like something, you know, they're in the middle of it, they get into some screaming match and he just does some shit like not even thinking, you know, there's you know, clearly negligent homicide, which is essentially criminal negligence. You know, the concealment of the corpse to me is probably, you know, what they're going to start with in order to try to get some answers, you know. I mean, like, they're dying to get these, you know, these people into a room, I'm sure. And as we know, mom has pulled a buzzard and is clamped up. So you're not hearing anything from her. You know, there's tampering with evidence. You know, there's obviously, you know, murder with intent, second degree murder. That's a higher bar, you know, and I don't think you're ever going to see a first degree premeditated on this thing. I think whatever happened here is something that just kind of popped up in the spur of the moment, you know.
How difficult does this make it for investigators and the state when they're trying to look at this, if this is, you know, in fact, a murder, second degree or whatever it may be, when you traditionally, you know, your victims, your survivors of this, the ones who would be rooting for let's figure this out, let's get justice for our loved one who has died here, are part of the same family, are part of the same team. And there may be, as horrible as it sounds, and I'm this is just my opinion, but, you know, there are situations where they may not want harsh penalties for a member of their own family, especially if they are looking at it from a familial prism of, well, you know, he was horsing around and it got out of hand. Did he make a bad choice? Yes, but he's only 16. If it were a completely other family and this is happening, and you find out your daughter's killed by some, you know, family member of another family that she went on this cruise with, and they're over here screaming, find justice. They're over here shutting up. We don't want to talk. We don't, you know, we're going to plead the fifth. That's got to make it a little more difficult. And does it, how does that affect charging? Does it affect charging at all when the folks that you're trying to seek justice for, including the dead woman, may not necessarily be, you know, shouting for justice?
I mean, that's not going to matter. Like we don't get to decide as citizens, like, oh, well, you know, yeah, some shit went down in our house, but we're good. You know, we don't want you to handle it because, you know, I mean, it was a family thing. That's, you know, if a crime was committed, a crime will be charged. You know, to me, kind of the bigger issue is going to be always trying to prove intent if, in fact, this kid's memory loss is legitimate. You know, I mean, and again, we're getting into that whole realm of mental illness, you know, or is this thing like, was this kid suffering from some mental illness that was undiagnosed, or was it diagnosed previously? Was it a situation where he literally has like dissociative amnesia? You know, I mean, there is a lot of documentation out there that that's a thing, you know, like it, not necessarily in the moment, but after the fact, like where this thing happens and you just can't remember shit. Like you just black out from it, you know, and the brain is doing what the brain does. It's trying to protect you psychologically. So it you know, blocks out memories of traumatic events. I mean, if that kind of shit is real, it makes it really, really challenging for any prosecutor looking at this to say, okay, you know, I don't even know which way to go with this, because I don't know what we're going to be able to prove in terms of that's side of it.
That's part of my argument is basically, if he's got the amnesia, he's not saying anything, and you don't have basically supporting evidence, you don't have a family that's going to step up to the plate, even if there is evidence. I'm not saying this is what's happening. I'm just throwing it out there as a scenario. A family that may be stepping up and saying, oh yeah, there's a patterned history here of him being violent or having some sort of issue with her or being aggressive or having an attraction or whatever the hell it may be. You may not necessarily have that piece coming to the table. And if you don't have those pieces of evidence that are going to support the character and support the possible issue between these two characters in this story, and you just have the one kid saying, I have amnesia and I don't remember exactly what happened. Clearly the evidence shows there was a strangulation chokehold that went on here that killed her. Where do you go with it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's really a tough thing. I mean,
yeah.
End of the day, what I think probably will take place if a prosecuting attorney decides that they're going to take a swing at it, you know, or like, all right, well, we're going to charge them and we're going to let them, you know, them being the defense, try to figure out, we're going to say he intentionally killed her based on the facts and the evidence that we discovered. Look, we saw them come back into the cabin together at whatever, 10 p.m. and we never see her again. And they're the only two in the room. And she was asphyxiated. So she didn't do it to herself. We know he killed her. You know, this is, and more likely than not, what they typically do, they'll overcharge. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and they'll let the chips fall where they may. I mean, just from circumstantially, you know, the kid's got some legal problems.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like you said, there's going to be video of them coming back into the room, or if she came in first, hour later, he comes in stumbling down the hallway, whatever, if he was able to score booze somewhere on the ship or whatever, you know, and then they see him come in and then they see him leave out.
Yeah.
Like, you know, 25 minutes later, she doesn't follow, you know, they never see her leave the cabin again. So, I mean, they're going to build the timeline. They're going to be able to kind of figure out when this happened. And they're going to obviously be able to say, all right, well, we know what the cause of death is.
Yeah.
And
we're talking. Yeah.
So many questions about it, though. Like the thing that we haven't even touched on, this is a cruise ship. Mm-hmm. I mean, who has jurisdiction of this thing?
Yeah.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.